In the summer of 2023, Maine Public partnered with StoryCorps in a Military Voices initiative to capture the stories of Maine veterans who served in the armed forces. During the recording sessions, veterans shared details about their tours of duty and how their time in the military affected both their lives and those of their loved ones. This limited podcast series is dedicated to these Maine veterans and their families. We want to thank them for sharing moments of their lives with us. I'm Keith Shortall. Let's get started. Episode 2, Love and Vietnam. In this episode of Military Voices of Maine, we'll hear from John and Lee. John was an Army officer, and Lee was a military contractor. Their love story begins against the backdrop of an officers' club called the Snake Pit. Here, John and Lee share the story of how they fell in love and how they faced the difficulty of separation while John was deployed in Vietnam.
My name is John W. McCarthy, Jr. I'm 78.
And my name is Lee Stevens McCarthy. I'm 79, although John and I were born in the same year. Let's start by talking about how you got into the military.
That's a long story, but it can be a short story. I went to college on a Navy scholarship, but I dropped out of college and in 1966. And shortly thereafter, I got a letter from the United States government with greetings, and they drafted me on November 17th, 1966.
And after Uncle Mike dropped you off, you went to Fort Dix, and then what?
Well, you remind me, of course, Uncle Mike, my younger brother by 3.5 years, did drop me off, and a classmate of his was there who was being sent there to the draft pickup point in lieu of going to jail. So it didn't leave a big impression on my younger brother that I was going to the Army. But I did go to Fort Dix, where I was there for two sessions, one for basic training and one for what's called advanced individual training. And they gave me a lot of tests, and they said that I could go to OCS if I wanted to. To tell you the truth, I didn't know any better, so this seemed like a wonderful opportunity. In fact, they told me this is how you could get into finance or intelligence, and that all seemed wonderful to me, so I said, sure. And so they sent me to Infantry Officer Candidate School, where I went for 6 months at Fort Benning in Georgia, at least what was then Fort Benning in Georgia. And it turned out to be a wonderful experience in terms of it was mean and nasty a lot of the times. But there I was, you know, flubbing around in the world, and suddenly for 6 months I was in training. I met people from all over the country. And although we never would dare to call it fun, in retrospect, it was a good experience.
And when you got out of OCS, where did you go?
I then went to Fort Knox, Kentucky, was my next assignment. And when I got there, I was an executive officer in what's called the United States Armor and Engineer Board, which was a scientific testing command full of people with PhDs and research people and engineers. But my job was to run the unit fund and to make sure that people lined up in the morning and shaved. I did that for about a year. And of course, as you know, that gave me time to go to the officers' club, which, as you know, we call the Snake Pit. And one day when I was there, I found you.
No, not quite.
Well, all right. So first, you're so precise even today. All right, so first we went on a double date, and you were somebody else's date, and I was on a blind date.
You're going too fast.
All right.
I'm there because I'm working for a military contractor doing computer simulations. I don't know you. I don't know anything about the Armor and Engineer Board. The officers that I worked with every Friday night, I would go with them for a drink after work to the Snake Pit, the officers' club. One night, some young officer asked me if I wanted to go to the trotting races at Louisville Downs in Louisville, Kentucky. And he said that it was going to be a double date. A friend of his was going to be with him. So I went with him.
And?
That was you.
No.
The friend was you.
I was the friend.
Yes.
And I had a date. He was so good, he got two dates. He got you, and he got me a date, too. Well, somebody I had never met.
A blind date, right.
Yes.
And so we went to the trotting races, and then, I don't remember exactly, the next night or something, maybe the next Friday, I was back at the Snake Pit. And there you were at the Snake Pit, and the rest, as they say, is history. So now I'm back at Kentucky and back to work, and you're landing in Saigon.
No. Now, this time you've gone too fast.
Oh, gosh.
Because the Army was forever training me, which I got thankful for when push came to shove.
Oh, I forgot.
But after we had our honeymoon in the middle of September, you flew back to Fort Knox. And I flew to Panama, where I went to the jungle training school in, I think it was Fort Sherman in Panama. And I forget whether I was there for 2 or 3 weeks. But the best thing about it is they gave me a certificate that said I was a jungle expert. I have it on the wall to this day, someplace in our house. When I came back to North Carolina, the Army says, you have, I forget, 14 days or 21 days or something to get to California to leave for Vietnam on October 5th. And I didn't take a horse. I flew to Kentucky, and we had another 3 days or 5 days or whatever it was, extra honeymoon.
In this surreal Vietnam War era, we just got in the car, you and I, and we drove to the Louisville, Kentucky airport, and we stood around and waited in a line, and then you got on the plane with everybody else who was going on vacation or to see their grandmother or something, only you weren't going to see your grandmother. I remember watching the plane taxi out and leave, and I had read somewhere that the Irish believe it's bad luck to watch someone who's leaving until you can't see them any longer. So just before I couldn't see the plane, when it was very, very small, I stopped watching, and I got in the car and I drove to work.
Well, the magic worked.
Yeah, apparently.
And then when I got to Travis Air Force Base in California, they put me on a great big plane with all other soldiers, and we flew first to the Philippines and then to Vietnam. It took a long time. Of course, now, after all of this military training and foolishness, suddenly I was really going to war. And the first time I became vaguely aware of it was when the doors to the plane opened. Even though it was a great big chartered plane, it didn't pull up to a little thing that slides out and you walk into. You walk downstairs to the ground, and the doors were open. When I came to the door, the first thing I felt was I almost couldn't breathe. It was so hot and so humid, but I recovered from that difficulty, and I was in Vietnam. But shortly thereafter, the whole battalion came in from the field. They'd be out there for a month or two or whatever period of time. It periodically come in. And so that's when I became the platoon leader for the 2nd Platoon.
Of the 2nd Platoon of Charlie Company.
That's right. At which there are 43 men in the infantry platoon. And so after a few days, we went up to a fire support base. And when I got there, we were there for not too many days. And as a mechanized unit, we had a function of sweeping the roads each day. Because during the night, the Viet Cong would plant mines in the road, but all the trucks and traffic had to travel along the road, and so somebody had to sweep the road. Well, luckily for me, we got our tracks and our 43 men, we'd be stretched out, but three engineers, combat engineers, were assigned. They were not part of us. They'd come with us each day, and they'd walk in front, literally with little mine detectors, just like you'd see on a beach today, and they'd walk along in a formation, and quite often they'd find mines. And they had bad little bayonet knives, and they'd fool around with their knives and uncover them, sometimes blow them up, sometimes pull them out.
So now you're at Firebase Gym doing all of this, going in and out, and you did more than just sweep the roads. You were setting up ambushes, you were doing field operations.
Of course, I was the kind of lowest level officer you could be. I was a platoon leader. The people at the top really didn't tell me what was going on. So neither my men nor I knew what was going on. We would just get orders to do things. And they were, you'd sweep roads, you'd go out on ambushes. Then we went to the Iron Triangle on short notice. The Iron Triangle was uninhabited by military people at the time. But someplace up the chain of command, the generals had found out from somebody that there were Viet Cong operating in an area. And we came into the Iron Triangle, and that was where I stayed the next few months. After you'd served for a certain amount of time, you were allowed to go on R&R. And I had a very capable partner back in Colorado who made all these arrangements in Hawaii. And so one day, a helicopter took me down to Tonsonute Air Force Base, and I got on a plane that the government paid for, and it flew me to Hawaii, and we spent six days, yes, yeah. In Hawaii. And we often tell this story, so we should mention it now. When you got there, you were getting off the plane. Maybe you should tell that story.
Well, there was a reception area where the military guys were coming from some other part of the airport, and we had to wait in some receiving room. And in a building, I had to walk down this long sidewalk to get to it. And it's the only time that I ran into personal negative, any kind of conflict about the war. You and I were ambivalent about it, but as I'm walking down the sidewalk, there were protesters on the sidewalk dressed up as if they were Vietnamese villagers, and they had red paint on rags on their heads, and they had dolls with their heads torn off and red paint on them all over the sidewalk. And I remember thinking, well, what's the right thing to do? Do I stop? Do I talk to them? What do I do? But I didn't do anything. I just walked on. I walked around them. I looked at them, and I went on to meet you in the reception area. And then you came home, and then you went back to school, and you finished, and then you went to law school, and then we had two sons, and now we have three grandsons, and all these years have gone by. The one thing that I find in retrospect most interesting is all the times people tried to help us. The guy who helped me from Watts Hardy Dairy in Boulder tried to send you a gallon of frozen vanilla ice cream all the way to Vietnam, and he packed it in this gigantic box with dry ice all around it, and I drove it to the airport in Denver, and he said it would stay frozen for 3 weeks, and about 6 weeks later, you wrote me a letter and said, well, thanks for the nice frap. It came in a plastic bag. It was totally melted. I don't know why it took 6 weeks to get there, and he would have done anything to try to get that ice cream to you. My friends from high school and college were going. All those guys were going to Vietnam on rotation the same time you were there. My brother-in-law was there. It was everywhere all around us, but nobody ever personally did anything negative to me.
When we moved to California and I went to law school, and of course there was very strong anti-war activities all over the country then, and we became part of them.
Yep.
And I never left feeling uncomfortable. I never felt against the war while I was there. I was drafted. I did what my mother always told me to do, just do a good job. Johnny, do the best you can. I did the best I can. I could. We came home, and it became obvious to us that the reasons in terms of governorship, not people, the war was the wrong, the Vietnam War was not the right course to take. But we came through all that too. And all in all, it's been quite a wonderful experience. I'm glad to have shared it with you.
And for you, the military, and even going to Vietnam, was a learning experience and a useful time in your life. It was hard. I wrote a letter to you every single day the whole time you were there, but it turned out not to be deleterious to us. We got through it, and we were lucky.
We were very lucky, and we came out with it being a positive experience, which is kind of feels like a peculiar thing to say in this day and age. But it, for us, it helped us progress through life.
Yep.
Thank you.
When John and Lee began their relationship, the United States was involved in one of the most divisive conflicts in our history. The Vietnam War took almost 60,000 American lives, tearing families apart and ending many relationships. But John and Lee made it through together. Love can grow, even when things are extraordinarily hard. And John and Lee taught us that frozen vanilla ice cream probably won't stay frozen when shipped from Tennessee to Vietnam. Next time on Military Voices of Maine, we'll meet Lieutenant Commander Nathan Farrell, an active duty military chaplain. Farrell joined the military later in his mid-40s. We'll hear about how he grew his faith by opening his heart. Military Voices of Maine is brought to you by a partnership with Maine Public and StoryCorps, as well as the Corporation for Public Broadcasting. This podcast series was made possible through the generous support of Lee Auto Malls, Wreaths Across America, and FedCap Maine. The series was produced by Allison New and Keith Shortall. That's me. You can listen to this podcast and others like it on our website, mainepublic.org, or wherever you find your favorite podcasts.